I signed on at 6 and nobody else was here. So, and of course I waited. All right.
We have no attendees.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. I would like to call to order the policy committee meeting of the Westmont Board of Trustees. It is Tuesday, January 18th, and it is 6:30 PM. Roll call, please.
Committee Chair Booth.
Here.
Board Vice President Carmichael. Elaine, you're muted.
Okay, there.
She's here. I'm here. Trustee O'Malley.
Here.
And Trustee Crotia.
Here.
All right, now Pledge of Allegiance. If you don't have a flag, face east.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
All right. Open forum. Does anyone have any comments before we start?
And Heather, did you want to maybe make the statement?
Yes, first? Thank you.
Yeah. Sure.
All right. The board president has determined an in-person meeting is not practical or prudent because of the public health disaster declaration in Illinois. So this policy committee meeting will be held remotely as permitted under Public Act 101-0640. In accordance with OMA guidelines, some staff are present at the library in case members of the public want to attend in person. This meeting is also available to the public via an online live platform, and the recording will be posted on the website. All votes at this meeting will be roll call votes. All right, thank you for reminding me of that. All right, so if we don't have any other open forum comments, I wanted to just kind of like start, since this is the first time that we've had a policy committee meeting with the new board members, just to say that, like, I think this is a great committee to be on as a new board. I mean, they're both great committees to be on, but I think that I always really appreciate when new people are able to participate in the policy committee, because you bring fresh eyes to all of these things. And so if there are things that we seem to be skating over, if those of us who have been on the policy committee meeting before and you have questions about them, or you're not sure why something happens this way, please do ask and we can have conversations about that, because it's very possible that there's something that we've overlooked or something that you have a different perspective on, and we can discuss that. So the first item A in new business is to review and recommend the confidentiality of patron records policy. So I did not see any changes to this policy. Julia, is that right?
You are correct. It's actually, I think, the first time in my tenure of putting policy packets together that I have no recommended changes for any of the policies. That doesn't mean there can't be any, obviously, that's what we're here to discuss, but I don't have any recommended changes, especially for this one. This is, as it's stated in the first sentence under the purpose, this is really laid out in law. And so it's really just taking, you know, what's in the law and codifying it into this policy. And so even if we didn't have this policy, we would still be bound by the law to follow it. But creating a policy that reflects all the guidelines in the law helps staff, obviously, to follow those, because we do routinely read the policies, and any new staff have to read the entire policy handbook, but also the public, and in this case, any law enforcement that might be might be subject to this. So, the law has not changed since we've reviewed this one. And we do, you know, at the bottom of each of our policies, as far back as I could go and find record of, I do put, you know, the date it's adopted, any amendments and any reviews of the policy. And so this one, as you can see, is also reviewed periodically, but there's been no changes to this law since I've been director. So it's all spelled out. It's pretty straightforward.
I did have one question on it.
more procedurally, is there ever a situation when you notify a patient, a patron when the request has been made?
You mean if we receive one from law enforcement?
Right. Do you notify the patient if you issued something in response to a subpoena?
No. So I've only had it happen once since I've been director, and our attorney gets involved. So the attorney gets the actual the court order, and I know that there's a difference between, I'm not a lawyer, obviously, library director, between the subpoena and a court order, and one is a hire where a judge has to sign it, and that's what's required. And so our attorney does review it and make sure that we're, you know, following all the law, you know, the guidelines in the law. But no, we did not at that. We did not, because it's a legal matter at that point. So.
Okay. All right. That makes sense.
And Julie, in that one instance, did this policy, was it upheld? What did it work in that instance where we had the subpoena or the court order?
It did. Yeah. Yeah, we provided them with a copy of the policy. They immediately got the court order. We had to send it back and say, actually, we need a, if I'm using the terms correctly, we needed the subpoena, or vice versa, whichever way it was. And they immediately got that, and we were able to fulfill that for them. Yeah.
Sounds good. Any other questions about that one? All right. I'm feeling so rusty on this. We're not voting on any of these. We recommend them to the board, the whole board. So we don't need to take a roll call vote now. I'm right about that.
No. Yeah.
Okay. Moving on to item B. So review and recommend the social media policy. Oh, another one with no changes.
Yeah, correct. Although, you know, like you said before, Heather, fresh eyes on this one might make sense, because it is, it's a tricky one. It's a tricky policy because there's a, you know, we have to make sure that we are, you know, we can never silence, you know, critics on social media. You know, the attorneys do review the social media policy. There are best practices, and so there are policies out there for government entities. There's different communities, I guess you could say, in Illinois Library Association, the State Library, Illinois Municipal League, and they'll put out drafts or model policies for you that come from attorneys that work for those organizations. And so that's really where this is adopted from. And so as much as possible, if people comment on social media, and again, in my experience here, we've never deleted a post or done, you know, taken any action. You know, best practice is to just let it play out and let people say what they want to say so that there is never any question of it. But there's obviously that could change if they, you know, if there was any obscene amateur, you know, so invading privacy, any posts like that. So this is where we would refer back to. And again, at that point, most likely our attorney would be involved just to make sure. But it's, you know, as everyone knows, social media is, it's prevalent everywhere, and it's always changing, and people like to talk, to say a lot of stuff and talk a lot on there. So we've never run into any problems with our social media websites or any of our posts. So, But again, you know, good to have fresh eyes on it. So if there's questions or suggestions, we're open to it.
I had a comment in where it says that Westmont Public Library reserves the right to monitor content, da, 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 and to modify or remove any content that it deems, et cetera, et cetera. I wondered if we wanted to add modify, remove, or report any content, because we are then later talking about posts that violate federal law or obscenities or things like that, that like, I'm assuming that if there was something that was hate speech or personally targeting some individual, it would be removed, and I would expect it also to be reported to whatever platform that was posted on. I wondered if that was something that the library had considered.
I've never considered it, but I think it's valid. I think, yeah, if someone made, for example, a threat, you know, a very specific targeted threat against someone on there, that we would absolutely report that. So I think that that's a really valid addition to that.
If you change that language, you might consider clarifying to whom you are reporting it. So to the social media platform terms of service or whatever, or is that a threat to report it to the cops, or, you know, who exactly are you reporting to? So you might want to make sure you say, you know, if you, you know what I mean? You know what I mean?
Yeah. Report it to your neighbor.
Authorities, something like that.
My mom, I think, my dog, my dog.
Your dog, yeah. I think report to, who was it said, authorities? Yeah.
Yes.
I think that's something like that would be broad enough that you could then use your discretion in whatever. I mean, if it's like somebody's spamming you with their dog walking business, like maybe you report it as spam, but you don't need to take it any further or something like that. But
right.
Yeah.
To the appropriate authority or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the appropriate authority.
What sites do we have content on that this could apply to?
So our big one is obviously Facebook. So we have a Facebook account, we have a Twitter account, and we have an Instagram account. Those are the big ones that we use. We also...
YouTube and LinkedIn, we additionally have presence on. And potentially a TikTok. It's been talked about. Not yet, but...
Is that Jason in the video?
I was going to say, the trustees are not dancing. This is
not us. Well, then I'll have to tell Aaron we've got to scrap the plan.
It is our marketing team that oversees our social media platforms and does the vast majority of the posting and commenting. And so that's under Brittany's umbrella. Marketing reports to her. So. And we do also, you know, we stayed under here, we do have our social media policies posted on any of the sites that allow us to do that. So Facebook, the social media policy is posted on there. So
I think that's really helpful and transparent. I think that's a good practice. Yeah.
I have one other question about the, sounds like we haven't had to take down a comment, but it seems like the policy says if we do take down, we have to preserve it so that it is preserved in case we have a Freedom of Information Act request. I was going to ask how we do that, but it sounds like maybe we don't know because we haven't done it.
I think we would just take a screenshot of it. Yeah.
I had a question along those lines too, and I feel like maybe we've talked about this before, but this wouldn't apply to like you post a program announcement and then you realize that there's a spelling error or the date is wrong. You can delete those and correct them, right? That doesn't apply. Is that correct? Right?
Okay. And you know, we interact with, you know, technology now. Even for example, you know, if anyone uses Google Docs, those are kind of live documents that we share amongst staff. And so those are constantly changing as well, but we are not required by the Record Retention Act to preserve every iteration of a record in that regard. Changing, you know, errors and typos, things like that are not, you know, as far as the social media platform and freedom of information freedom of information is not a thing.
All right, those are my only thoughts on that one. Any other questions? All right, we're on to item C. Review and recommend the meeting room use policy. So another one with no changes. So this, and then Julia, just to clarify at the outset, these are the meeting rooms and not the study rooms that we're talking about, right?
Correct. Yep. Back past that, question earlier too. It's a good question. These are just the meeting rooms. So it's the KMR, which is the classic meeting room upstairs, and this is the community meeting room on the first floor. So this is a policy that, again, I guess I feel like I probably say this a lot, but it's true that attorneys usually vet very closely. And you know, there's certain reasons why we have very strict guidelines and use. And I think the example that some of the attorneys like to use is, you know, if for example, you opened meeting rooms up, you know, at large to anyone, you know, you have to be consistent. You can't then discriminate against which groups or individuals would use your room. And so they like to say, you know, if the KKK came in and wanted to use your meeting room, if you didn't, you know, have parameters or guidelines around that, that, you know, you'd have to let them do that. So that's, maybe shouldn't have introduced the policy like that because it's very dark, but that's the reason that we have guidelines for usage. And because, you know, priority we want to make sure is given to our taxpayers, but we also want to give them enough flexibility that they can use the meeting room. So availability and use, we do say they have to be someone in the group has to be a Westmont cardholder. And then as far as the making the reservations in advance, that has to do with our programming because we need priority to be for our programs. And so we work on a quarterly basis. So the 90 days gives us, you know, enough time to plan ahead and get those programs into our calendar and then open it up and allow residents to get in and make reservations for themselves. We did have, you know, in the past, we had a lot of usage and a lot of groups wanting it repeatedly, you know, every week at this time. And so that's why we put a limit on the number of times groups can use it in any given quarter. You know, with the pandemic, that's changed a little bit. We weren't allowing meeting room use much last year at all, but now that we are, it's slow, but it is also picking up. And so Brittany was managing those reservations and watching on the staff end as well. So we have a lot of the groups that were using it have kind of swooped in and started using it again. So again, this is just I guess my initial comment was just to say that the attorneys also look at these policies, and there's also draft, you know, model policies put out about meeting room usage. So a lot of this is based on those best practices and just our experience really with issues that have come up in our community in the meeting room, so.
I did have one question on this one, whether or not the group thinks that it would be worthwhile to put something in the guidelines about restrictions that are based on local or state mandates during a public health emergency, given COVID, you know, the state of Illinois had some gathering restrictions that weren't really necessarily occupancy or code issues, but were more due to the public health emergency.
I'm looking at it just to see where something like that could potentially.
Yeah, me too. Yeah.
I think if we put it in, it would be somewhere within the guidelines, the bulleted list, maybe in the guidelines.
See, I'd use, I don't, I can pull it up. The last policy committee meeting we approved, Heather, if you remember, we inserted that in our bloodborne pathogen policy, right. And there was another one, and it was basically our conduct policy, I believe, just that patrons had to follow any reasonable restrictions or rules that staff may enforce.
Let me see if I can find that, yeah.
I can look that up here too. Because the wording on that might be very similar to something we might insert here.
So let's see. I'm pulling a bloodborne pathogen right now.
I don't see anything in the library use and conduct policy related.
Oh, it's under maintain a healthy and clean environment. It says violating reasonable rules that are enacted to secure the health and safety of staff and patrons.
Yeah.
I think that's what we inserted.
It is. Yeah, we inserted that in, yeah, like you said, under the maintain a healthy and clean environment, and we did the same in the bloodborne pathogen. So that might be, may
result in I don't tend to like duplicating instructions across policies, just because if it's in one place, it's in another. But this does seem like a significant enough expectation, you know, specifically relating to accessibility and health and laws and things like guidelines, state guidelines. I think that would be a good addition.
Or not, if everyone agrees, but yeah, we can.
Could it go under the, could it go as the third bullet point?
Under guidelines?
Yes.
Yeah, so between the second and the third, is that what you mean? Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah, because then that specifically names the conduct policy. Yeah.
Yeah.
And what's the language again that considering?
Yeah. The language is violating reasonable rules that are enacted to secure the health and safety of all patrons.
Of staff and patrons.
Thank you. Health and safety of staff and patrons. Yeah. We don't have we do have a chat. I'll post this in the chat if that works.
I think that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. I like that phrasing because it's applicable to other situations as well.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we're not going to do a flame throwing demonstration in the library meeting rooms.
No,
that would be fun. I'd go to that program.
Right? That would, you'd get a big crowd. That's why it would not be safe, because you'd have a lot of people there.
Now I have to cancel a performer.
The fire department probably wouldn't be too happy with us.
But they're close, so, you know, not much would burn.
You could just run right over.
Yeah. We did just have our inspection, so we're good there.
Yeah.
The suppression system would work. We would have no materials, but the suppression system would work.
All right. I love that.
That was a good find. Any other ideas or comments? All right. So moving on to item D, discussion of the next policy committee meeting review. We are doing such a great job keeping up to date with these. I really do think that it's nice. It keeps the meetings brief and things are constantly looked at on a rotating cycle. So I looked ahead at the next few policies that are going to be the oldest. And it looks like the outdoor digital sign policy, the identity protection policy, and then the volunteer and community service policy look like the next ones that that we could look at. Any others that people want to add in? So if you look at that list, you'll notice that there are some that are older than the ones that I mentioned. Those are in the bylaws and board meeting policies, which are largely, like Julie was saying with the other ones, those are largely set by state statute and things like that, that we'll just wait until they have updates for us. And then the finance policies, which are typically looked at by the finance committee.
Would you say which ones you're looking at again?
Yeah. It's the outdoor digital sign policy.
Okay.
The identity protection policy. And then volunteer and community service. I thought this would be a good time to look at that one, even though that's a little bit newer, just because then we get that before they do any of the summer volunteer stuff, just so that mm-hmm. if anything needs to be updated for that, we've got that.
Good idea.
Julie, are you aware of any changes to law or just process that would say, let's look at something else instead? No?
No. Okay. Yeah, no, and as those occur, I definitely let you guys know and I add them. And if we don't even have a policy meeting in between and we need to do that, I'll bring that to the full board. So a lot of the laws enacted take place, not all obviously, but a lot of them will come in on January 1. So there wasn't any that were passed that we didn't either already have in our policy or that needed to be in policy.
Right. Any other comments or questions or anything like that? All right, then I think we will adjourn. Can you get a motion to adjourn?
I move we adjourn.
I can second.
All right, thank you. And then do we need a roll call to adjourn? I don't think you do need a roll call to adjourn. Okay, roll call, please.
Only because we're virtual. Otherwise, no.
Thanks.
Vice President, Board Vice President Carmichael?
Yes.
Trustee Krotiak?
Yes.
Trustee O'Malley?
Yes.
Committee Chair Booth?
Yes.
4 ayes, 0 nays, motion passes.
Okay, I'm officially stopping the recording.
We're adjourned at 6:57.
Now I'm officially stopping the recording.